Preservation Commission to order. For any members of the public who are here, we ask that you sign in the sign-up sheet in the back. During this meeting, we will be discussing the letter regarding the Providence Academy. If any members of the public are interested in receiving a final copy of that, we ask that you include your email on the sign-in sheet back there, and we'll get a copy of that letter.
And a note that you want it, so just...
I guess a note that you want the letter on the sign-in sheet. Add that so that it's clear. So we'll start with roll call and start here on my right and just go around and introduce ourselves.
Don Trost, Commissioner.
Julie Bond, Commissioner.
Andy Gregg, Commissioner.
Sean Denniston, Vice Chair.
Alex Gall, Chair.
Michelle Kapitonovich, Commissioner.
Jackie Camp, Clark County Staff.
Jan Bader, City of Vancouver Staff.
So we have one absence, which I will assume is excused, since we know that he's struggling with a cold. So we'll start with approving last month's meeting's minutes. If anybody needs a minute or two to review those minutes, we'll give it to you now. And at any point, I'll entertain a motion to approve those once people are done reading them. Or if anybody has any comments.
Good word.
Edits.
I reviewed them and have no comments.
Yeah, I don't have any. I reviewed them.
Okay.
And then 2-3.
I'm entertaining a motion.
I move that we approve the minutes.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? So moved. All right. So the first item on the agenda is the Bertha Birdie Fifield House. Do we have somebody here? Yeah, come up and introduce yourself. You can turn on the microphone.
All right. My name is Lisa Aga. My husband had scheduled the appointment. I have him on the phone. Unfortunately, he's still at work. So we purchased the Bertha Fifield home just on October 18th. And there's a couple of things with the property, with it being on the historic registry. We want to stay in compliance with everything that we need to be able to keep up with it. Our homeowner's insurance is asking, there's a deck that doesn't have a railing on it, that they would like to have a railing that's put on. So I wanted to find out if there are certain things that what we can do to keep our insurance, our homeowner's insurance happy, that's also in compliance with the historic preservation and society everything. So I don't know exactly how this whole process will work. This will be my first meeting. So,
do we have access to the nomination form?
So we can all pull it up on our phone. It has two, it's pretty unique. It's got two historic structures on it. Which were both moved from other locations in the county.
Yes.
What she's referring to is the Fifield House.
Well, I guess the reason it's not, I mean, if the deck is like one of the, I don't know.
So I guess what happened was when they had first, when they had moved the house, it had a wraparound deck that was originally on the house. And then before it was on the historic registry, I believe they had added on a portion of the house that had eliminated a portion of the deck. And basically the railing that was in one portion of the house, it just, it was never either there or added back on. So the front desk, the front deck has a railing that's on it, but the side portion is just a drop off. And that's where the insurance is having the harder time.
Is it more of a, is it a deck or more of a porch?
It's, well,
it, when you it said has. Around the house, when I think if it goes around the house, I kind of think more of a porch. So,
because like I just think of
pictures
of
the end.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a picture. If this is the online version, I don't think there's a picture on that side. So where that white pole is, right there, it's on that far. It's on the left side.
Okay.
Is there a roof that goes over it?
There is not.
So it's uncovered.
It is uncovered.
So it would be on this view. Okay.
I'm going to just pull up, see if I can find another closer picture.
There we go.
This is the front of the house.
Portion you're talking about is around.
Is on the okay. It's on the side of the house.
Back to the one you were. Yeah, just yeah. Slow down.
Okay, so I have another picture on my phone, if you guys. Sure. It's not a super up close picture, but. It'll give us a better idea.
It's probably better than the Xerox.
Yeah. What is the email address? Clark.law.gov.
Well, in any case, Sean, or maybe you can speak to, I mean, is this the kind of thing that they would be needing a certificate of appropriateness for, or is this a minor?
It would need a certificate of appropriateness for it. Depending on the scope of it, it's something the staff might be able to just approve, though. Without seeing the building itself, it's, mm-hmm. it's kind of hard to tell.
I mean, sort of the litmus test is does it undermine its integrity and,
mm-hmm.
and potential for continued listing, right? Yeah.
So this deck is on the back side of the house?
To the east, side.
L-M-P.
M-P?
Yeah.
Okay.
Would the east be one of the sides then? Okay.
Yes, yeah, so it'll be the side, the front part of the railing on the picture that you guys do have. It'll need a railing there as well. They're not too happy with the condition, and then parts of it is missing. And that actually does have the overhang, so it is a deck.
So generally speaking, people come in with their needs, you know, with sort of a bit of a presentation, you know,
photos of the building and then maybe some mock-ups of what you're talking about and different options that go with it. And getting our advice, you know, in particular, I'm not one of the architectural people on this commission, but, you know, talking to some of the architects on this commission and others, they'll give you a sense of what are the most appropriate options. Mm-hmm. And then you come back once you've, you know, gotten a contractor and everything else to do the work or however it's going to go down, and, you know, we issue a certificate of appropriateness, and that's really the document. But again, as Sean said, if it's a small enough modification that maybe staff can approve it because it doesn't rise to the level of, you know, having the potential to undermine the structure's integrity or its, you know, its eligibility for listing on the register, then it may not be that big a deal where you have to come back and get a certificate of appropriateness from us.
Okay. Do you guys, so I think that you guys meet the first Wednesday of every month, so the next one's January 1st.
We're bumping it back a week.
Okay.
So that would be the next one. So, yeah, I would say just, you know, come in with a bunch of information and pictures so that it's easy for the commission to picture what these, you know, where it is on the house, what this, you know, like, obviously we're getting hung up on deck versus porch and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, it's important that everybody's on the same page and has a clear understanding of what these modifications are, what their potential impacts to the structure are, and then whether it has the potential to, you know, things like swapping out the historic windows. Like, that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Putting a railing up, particularly a railing that may have been there before,
mm-hmm.
or a railing on a porch or a deck that is already an after, it's already been, you know, modified several times or wasn't on the original house or whatever, you know, as part of an addition that was put on later.
Mm-hmm.
All those factors come into play. So, you know, the more information we have, the better advice we can give you, and the more sure you can be that when you come in to get that certificate of appropriateness that it'll go through.
Okay.
How high is the deck or porch off the ground?
It's like this high.
Okay. Well.
So it's like we have two little ones that it's a little bit more of a safety concern for us on our part, and that's where insurance is coming in. So it's coming off of, there's a double French door for the side of the house. It's an exterior that literally just drops off. The front porch, it's not as high, but the steps on the front porch they're all kind of slanted and everything. So you just slide right off of it.
So, you know, generally being listed is not going to prevent you from making the house safe. You know, these are, I mean, if it's that high off, if there's problems with the steps, I mean, those are safety issues, and being listed is generally not going to be an obstacle to making your house safe. It mostly comes down to a matter of how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And we can help you, you know, if you come with some pictures and, you know, maybe you identify some products, you know, we're thinking of a railing like this or maybe one like this, and we can help give you feedback on that sort of thing to help you navigate that. Like Alex said, with the windows, you know, that's always a big issue because windows are character defining.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's some more appropriate ways to deal with windows that might be failing or failed than just the window salesman wants you to replace everything.
Right.
But there are options besides replacing anything, and sometimes they're cheaper, and sometimes they'll end up being more energy efficient than that window that they want to sell you. So, you know, there are options there, and we can help you with that too. What's the issue with the siding?
It's stained wood that's on the siding of the house, and the basically insurance is telling us that we have to paint it within the first year of us of being there. So is that something we can just go through and just paint the house? Because I know that we're not supposed to change much to the exterior. Like, what would be options there?
I don't think we have any specifics on paint.
Yeah, I don't recall. I mean, I guess it would depend, you know, if the nomination had something to do with, I can't even imagine, but I mean, you know, if it was nominated for.
It was built in 1910, so I'd hopefully that was what the nomination was for.
White, and it
going from a stained siding to a painted siding would have a definite impact on the character. Mm-hmm. And so, you know.
And they used to have paint on it before. It's just the people that owned it, that we had purchased it from, they just loved the more stained look.
Oh, okay.
They were very just not, they didn't like paint. Literally nothing in the house is painted. So.
So, yeah, you know, one of the things, generally we don't regulate paint colors, and if it was painted originally and someone just subsequently changed it, then you know, that probably would not be...
Simplifies
it quite a bit because, yeah, then it's, oh, it was painted before, you want to paint it? Mm-hmm. You know, I hope you pick some good colors, but, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, even then coming back with this is how the painter, you know, if you get the painter estimate and they say that these are the things they're going to do, if the estimate says they're going to come through with a blowtorch to, you know, do paint removal, we'll say, hey, that's probably not a good idea.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, as much information as you can bring. And, you know,
is there anything that we'd be able to do just ourselves? Like, would we be able to just paint our house ourselves? We wouldn't have to have a contractor?
You wouldn't have to have a contractor, no.
Okay. Okay.
I would advise you against pressure washing it, though.
Pressure wash it, you just have to do it in the summer and wait 2 weeks for it to dry out completely.
Anyway.
Okay. I guess I think the last thing we were talking about, the window, and I don't know if this would be something to talk about today. It's not something we plan to do right away, but we wanted to find out if it was a possibility. All the other windows in the house have on the main level, I should say, all the ones upstairs, the window is like this far off of the floor. Like, they're very, very low. And the kitchen one is like that as well, that goes out to the porch that doesn't have the railing as well. We intend to keep, like, you know, the wood windows and everything, but is there a way to get it approved to be able to at least raise up the window to shorten it a little bit in that on the main floor at least?
Is that window an original window, do you think? That on the first floor?
Possibly. It possibly. What if it wasn't?
I mean, is it consistent with the other windows on the first floor?
A lot of the other ones are higher.
Yeah.
They're much higher. They're more, or my toddler isn't going to fall out of my house.
Right. You know,
you're looking at it as a safety issue.
I am, as a mother, just myself, it's definitely very concerning. I don't even allow my kids to go up on the main floor because I have a one-year-old that literally just, you stand right at the window, and if it's open, if she were to lean out, she would fall a full two stories. So I just don't even allow them upstairs right now as we're trying to get everything all lined up.
Mm-hmm. There are internal things that you can do, you know, simple grates and bars, you know, that can be installed on the interior that can make them safe so that no one would fall out, including mm-hmm. an adult, because it's not just little kids that are the issue. And that would both be way cheaper mm-hmm. and would have, you know, zero impact on the historic integrity of the house from the outside, because it's completely reversible as well. So no real impact from the inside either. So replacement may not be the only solution to that safety issue and may not even be the best one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about screens?
Screens. There's no screens in the house right now.
But could you install screens?
Yeah, but they're not really a
I know that.
Safety measure. Unless malaria is what you're concerned about.
Always.
Kids can bounce right through them, unfortunately.
Yeah, and just the layout of how it's in our kitchen, the way that we'd kind of like to just move everything around and stuff, would be nicer if it was up higher mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, you know, the more information that you can bring, the more that we can help you. You know, is that a primary facade, a secondary facade? Those things all have an impact.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we might look at a photo and see that there was a previous window. I mean, that window that you're talking about isn't original to the house, and maybe the original window was up higher, or maybe there was a door there, or, you know, who knows?
If it is a primary window, would there be options?
It all comes down to the specific thing you want to do. Mm-hmm.
Raise it a foot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Raise it a foot or two. Yeah. Get it up a little bit higher.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think at this point we could really give you a definite yes. yes or no. I mean, like I said, there might be a, you know, we may see things in better photos here, and, you know, we don't know which window it is. So I would say when you get to that point, you know, think about the options with, you know, the information we've given you here tonight. Think about your options, and then, you know, come back before us and give us as much information, and we'll give you as our best advice.
Okay. So the email that I had, well, trying to send the picture to, insurance is kind of getting to us a little bit more on the railing part of it. I can let them know that we don't have another meeting scheduled until January 8th. Is there anything that we could do before that if they're just like, we can't wait until the 8th?
You don't have to do everything all at once. And, you know, so a railing is something that the staff might be able to approve depending on what it actually looks like. And so, you know, you can get the pictures together and check with staff to see if maybe you can at least get that part of it, you know, because it may be able to be approved without us being involved, and so you don't have to wait for us.
Okay.
And, you know, if you need to do this in pieces, you can always do it in pieces.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. No reason to wait on the rail until you figure out things on the windows.
Trying to send it over, but it's not allowing me to change that in.
I think you guys were emailing with Sharon. She's the other staff person. So you probably have her email for sure. So tomorrow, why don't you send her an email with the photo, and we can start a conversation about maybe looking at the railing piece of it. So we can determine whether or not that could be just a staff thing.
Okay.
So why don't we get in touch maybe tomorrow or Friday?
Okay.
Does that sound good?
I think my husband probably has her email.
Okay, perfect. And you can find them also on our the historic preservation web page as well.
Okay.
Both of ours. I don't have a card, or I would give that to you.
Is it Sharon dot Lumban? Yep. Okay. Yep, we got it.
Okay, cool. She's not sick, but she's forwarding me stuff. So if I can help this week, I will. Otherwise, we can check back in next week.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
Always best to come in early.
Okay, moving along to new business, Ridgefield Fire Station, Station 24, possibly to be closed and sold.
Yes, Sharon wanted to bring this just as an FYI. We got an email from Sarah Fox, there was an article about this a couple weeks ago in the Columbian. So there's a possibility that the county is going to sell the building and they're going to build a new facility. So it's, I think, 1941, right? So she just kind of wanted to put it on your radar as to, we don't know anything about the plans for it, if they're just going to sell it or whatnot, but just to, you know, that it's a
Does
older.
Does the county own it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
And it's not on any register
right.
or anything.
Yeah.
Looks like it's been significantly modified.
So that's kind of just what that one is. We're trying to, you know, keep you all informed of anything that may be coming your way or you might want to lend your voice to. So that's that. So we'll keep as much as we hear, we'll share with you.
All right.
But I think she just wanted to share that.
Okay. all right, old business and updates, rules and procedures. Historic promotion grant section. Are you going to stand in for Sharon?
Yes, yes. So this is another installment of your rules and procedures update, and this is actually a new addition to it. We've, since we
the last rules and procedures were done, I want to say 2007, and it wasn't until, I don't know, 2016 that the Historic Commission started doing the historical promotion grants. So we thought it would be a helpful piece to put in your rules and procedures to for anyone wanting to know what the process is and how it goes through applications to the committee and whatnot. So I think she pretty much took this from the guidelines that we have as part of the grant program and what how we've been administering those. So let us know if you have any revisions or edits for that. And like we've talked about before, all of these sections, when we're all finished with them, will come back before you, like in a hearing where you will officially approve them. But okay. We're trying to do them in bits and pieces to just work through.
So for now, sort of the action item is to
just give us any
give you
changes
feedback.
That you're okay. thinking about, or any questions, or anything we can answer.
On page 3, it sounds very awkward. I'm not quite sure what they were, what she was trying to
get.
Okay. So that would, maybe that little puzzle needs
sure.
just a little bit of work.
Sure, thank you.
When I read through it, I think the one thing that I thought of ties back to one of the comments that I had made before as we talked about this is I think some kind of report back to the commission
right.
would be great as far as the procedure that, you know, even if that's just here's all of the final reports that we got from the grantees you know, all together. And, you know, I hate to make work for you guys, but, you know, if at least maybe some kind of assessment of you know, the level of success of the grantee accomplishing the purpose that the grant was for. You know, I think it would be good for us to have a level of just to have that check back on you know, how are our grantees doing and how well, how successful have you know were those grants so that we can learn lessons moving into the future
okay.
with future grants.
So do you envision like each kind of applicant coming and presenting or
No, I don't think we need anything.
Okay. So like something that we just kind of run through.
Yeah, I could easily just see a
some feedback.
Yeah, just some feedback. You know, here's the because you're already requiring the report
mm-hmm.
for the grantees.
Right.
You know, so bringing those all together, and even if it's just couple of sentences from staff, you know, if a couple of sentences is all that's needed, but you know, maybe sometimes you know, this grant went horribly wrong, and here's the things that we learned, and you know, if it justifies more, that'd be great. If it doesn't, don't want to just create busy work, but I think some kind of real you know, assessment of how the grant worked and how well, how successful it was, be useful, and then just for us to see those report backs, you know, to have the opportunity to review them. In a single document, I think would be useful for us.
Okay.
Or even, you know, maybe that's something that the subcommittee could do is the assessment of how they felt, mm-hmm. the how successful the grant was at meeting the goals from the application, since they're also really familiar with it. Somebody does it. I don't care who.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Sean.
Well, that's it.
I had a question about the final report coming back from the grantee. It says within 90 days of receiving the grant, but what if the action that they're doing under the grant takes longer than 90 days to complete? Is this supposed to be a final report of the success of the action of the grant?
Yeah, so the 90, so if an applicant, say, so in January is when the funds become available.
Right.
They've made some caveats where an applicant could request the funds ahead of time, like they could request it beginning of January, but they have to complete the project within 90 days from when they receive the check. So I think that's the 90-day kind of provision. So when we get get the final report, that means that the grant is closed out, and if they took to the whole year, then by December, that's when they have to submit the final report. So it depends on when they are requesting the money. Does that make sense?
It does.
No, yes, no. I mean,
so maybe it needs to be clearer in
yeah.
the procedures.
Yeah, but I have a question about that too. We're not allowed to give the money out in advance.
They've allowed it for smaller organizations that may not have the money up front to
so they can take
cover
it out
it.
Incrementally.
Yeah, they can take it. Well, usually they might ask for the whole amount.
Right.
Or they might ask for half. Or, but then once they get the money, they have 90 days to finish.
So in your example.
Okay, let's take a hypothetical. Like, you know, I remember just off the top of my head, like Shalachi Prairie Railroad or something. Mm-hmm. They want to do some upgrade. I mean, you know, that might be weather dependent. And I mean, if you can't get it done in 3 months, I mean.
That's only if they ask for the money.
The option of doing the work and then getting received.
Yeah, like a reimbursement. Okay. Which is, that's
so
the
if they ask
way.
For it up front, then there's the stipulation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but is that reasonable? What if they need the money up front, but it takes longer than 90 days to do the project? What's so special about 90 days as long as they're following a reasonable schedule for the project?
Well, how do you define reasonable?
So they're
in their application, they're going to have to tell us, and we're going to have to agree with it.
So the state does not like us to give money in advance because we're paying for work that has not been done yet. So even the fact that you're stretching it to do that, I mean, we can't can't even do that. It's all on a reimbursable basis.
And okay.
Because they want to say that.
Here's a product.
Here's the product that you're paying for.
I guess I'm thinking of the Nutcracker production that we approved this year. And let's say that they're doing costumes and they're hiring, and it takes a year to do that work, but they got the money up front and they were doing the work over time. I guess that's the situation where.
That's what I was thinking of.
Well, I think it's all in the grant. I mean, they kind of know what's going in. So,
okay.
I
just curious.
Yeah. So it's all bailed out in the grant agreement that they have between the county and the applicant. So if it's not going to work for them, then they're going to have to find another.
Okay. And by the way, they got another $10,000 from the city for the same project for the Nutcracker costumes. And they know going in that it's reimbursable.
Yeah. Okay.
So they got $20,000 for costumes.
I mean, I would be fine if it were only reimbursable. And if it is the money up front version of it, I think that having pretty strict conditions on when someone can actually get it up front, considering it's unusual to get up front, I think is reasonable.
And we found, because we used to do it that way, our finance department got involved, those are sometimes the ones you have trouble with, because you've already given them the money, and then they don't fulfill either they don't meet the timeline or they don't do what they said they were going to, and then there's the whole hassle of trying to get the money back. Mm. I mean, I literally had one guy bring in a basket of receipts and drop it on my desk. And I was like, great.
Yeah.
I have to now match these all up with.
Yeah, that's what
they get a bad. Great. They get a bad mark on the board.
It's rare for someone to request it, so it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
But, and it's really, really for those really small organizations that just don't.
Which is nice.
I was thinking like the North Clark County Historical Society and their piano. You know, I'm just thinking that might take more than 3 months to do. Yeah. And,
they have to cover that.
Yeah. I mean, okay.
So just going back to this sentence, right? This is the sentence we're kind of all discussing. The last one: the grantee may request funds at any time, but is required to finish the project within 90 days. So 90 days from receipt of funds is really what we're saying. Is that right? Because I could interpret it, if I were the grantee, I could interpret it that
receiving grant award could be.
Yeah, that they could.
You got a letter saying, "Hey, you."
Are you on the third page or the?
I'm under grant payments. That very first paragraph. That's on page 2.
Oh, that doesn't match.
So I guess I would just.
Yeah, I think
we need to clarify. Yeah.
Close within 90 days of receipt of funds. Is that what that is intended to mean? Yeah.
Well, get all your comments in.
Yes. Okay. Feel free to add. If you have any more, email it to Sharon.
I'm sorry, I haven't had a chance.
Oh, no worries. Yeah, sounds good. Anything else?
Until we start discussing it.
Right. Okay.
You guys have been doing a great job with this. Keep it up.
Okay. That is all for that one.
Okay, the Intangible Cultural Heritage Subcommittee update the letter to DAHP. We have a draft letter, or no, we have the letter here. Oh, I guess it's a draft. It doesn't have letterhead or anything like that.
Were there any edits that folks had with regard to this?
There was one thing that Don brought up that on
page three.
Right, page three, the bullet point there kind of has a ghost sentence at the end. There's a title.
Oh, yes.
So I got in touch with Sharon. I sent her, because she's at home, and she got Don's voicemail. So it was her memory was that you were moving stuff around, and so she believes that it probably just needs a period after techniques, mm-hmm. and then
so that there's nothing else.
Here. Right. Okay. Yeah.
With track changes, it's hard to see where you're
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
So that's probably what happened.
Okay. That was the only comment I have when I looked at it.
Okay.
When I looked at it, the one thing that struck me as the tied to a skill, I wonder if that can be broader to tied to an activity.
It's really broad.
It is really, it does broaden it, but, you know, I'm thinking of, like, rituals that may not strictly be skills, but are intangible heritage.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've kind of had a little bit of a issue with the bullet points in general. I feel like we're starting, I don't know, we almost started providing, I mean, you know, this letter is, the purpose of this letter is to sort of transfer this idea from the county level to the state level, where and I feel like with the bullet points, we started kind of offering up our sort of Clark County-centric ideas of, you know, and what came out of our discussions with them. So it seems like the bullet points don't cover the breadth and depth of what ICH is, and it almost sort of starts imposing limitations that don't necessarily need to be there, because, you know, ICH is such a broad topic that could include so many things, from skills and activities to, you know, ritual and tradition. And
well, then maybe just making, because I think the examples are great, and I think that they are something that we want to pass along to the state. So maybe just really dialing up that these are examples rather than.
It says that.
It does, but it's, I mean.
It lists in the paragraph immediately above the bullets.
Yep.
It lists a lot of different things, including some of these ceremonial things, et cetera.
It does.
As other examples include, and it just lists three other examples.
And I blew right by that. And that's why I'm saying, you know.
Maybe we could just
that's why it didn't. I guess that all I'm saying is that's why it didn't trouble me when I saw it.
Mm-hmm. But
I wasn't saying those are exclusively the examples.
But just maybe being explicit, because.
We could separate it?
Because I'm. Well,
what about the word tradition instead of?
It could be a tradition, but I think just suggesting that there are lots of examples. Here are some from Clark County, because if I blew right by it, then other readers. Hopefully, I'm not the only one dumb enough to go right by that.
Let's keep that object in the list in mind for our next item.
Any other thoughts? I mean, on. That. I mean, it didn't bother me enough, you know. I mean, as I was reading it, I was like, I don't know about the bullet points and stuff, but it does carry over the work that we did, and so I felt like
the intention is full transparency of what we've accomplished so far.
Yeah.
The information that we've been discussing, please take it on.
Yeah, and if, you know, these are an example from Clark County, just think of
right. maybe parallels.
It might be mm-hmm. statewide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's, you know. Wouldn't want to characterize it as a flaw, as just a suggestion. Overall, I think the letter is great. You know, I think that this really captures the discussions we've had as a commission and way more. So, I mean, your subcommittee has obviously done quite a bit. So I think this is, I'm pretty impressed with this. I think this is a great thing to pass along.
Okay. Well, do we want to vote on it then? I mean.
Yeah, I'm good as is. I would recommend approval.
Do we want to change out the word skill for
activity.
Well, but the example there is a skill.
Okay.
Yeah, the example is a skill.
Example of skill.
So we'll leave it.
So if you want to add some additional ones, I guess that would be possible. But I felt that in the examples above the bullets, it covered a broad range of things, including canoeing, smelt, salmon, forest management, drumming, singing. So it seemed to me it was pretty inclusive.
Okay.
The way I looked at it.
No, we just have that one at where that sentence.
Yeah, so I'd offer a friendly amendment that we approve it, fixing the one thing on on page 3.
Writing the word and putting a period instead of comma. Okay. So I'll entertain a motion.
Well, he gave the motion.
Oh,
I gave a friendly amendment.
Oh, okay.
All right.
So all in favor? Oh, do we need a
second?
Oh, there you
go. Oh, can I second? I do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, you should make the motion.
Oh, I'm still learning.
Oh, my motion to let you.
Okay. All in favor of approving the ICH letter, say aye.
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 All opposed? So moved.
So I fixed it and have it already if you want to sign it. Because that's the only change, right?
Yes.
Yes. But it
even better reason not to listen to my other things.
Oh. Finish something.
He needs Jan's.
You whited it out?
No, I fixed the official one. Because I figured, but just in case you all were, it was that was going to be it. So.
Yes, we wanted that and to stay in there.
Do two versions.
Okay. Providence Academy. So for members of the public who were not here when I said this before, we have a sign-in sheet. We are going to be voting on the on approving the draft letter that and if any members of the public would like to receive the final version of the letter, we ask that you indicate that on the sign-in sheet, include your email so that staff can get you the final version of the letter. All right. We had some edits from Rock Manley, who couldn't be with us this evening, so maybe we ought to just kind of go over those suggestions. So on page 1, there was a suggestion to add a footnote after the quote of the VMC, which seems reasonable to me. It seems like it would be consistent with the rest of the letter that has citations to that effect. So anybody feel one way or the other about that?
I'm fine with both. There's actually two changes on page 1. There's punctuation above it.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with all of those personally.
And then was the word the added before?
Yes.
Most important.
Okay. E.T. changed the long sentence into two sentences.
Yep.
And added the word the in front of most important historic building in downtown Vancouver.
I might suggest we discuss whether there, if anyone has any issues with any of Rock's edits. I was on the subcommittee, and I don't think that any of his edits changed the substance. I understand why he made all of them. And I think the only one that makes a major change is to the additional considerations, removing 1 and 6. Mm-hmm. And I understand why he suggests that, and I personally don't have a problem one way or the other. But
I feel strongly about the a preservation plan or some kind of management plan or some kind of plan for the property.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to see, maybe the wording here is the apparent lack of comprehensive, I was thinking about changing it to develop a comprehensive preservation plan or something to that effect, or a management plan or, whatever. And I don't know that it's necessarily redundant with
Well, I mean, the commission recommendations in on page two, the third bottom
it is,
page.
It is the same, but it's important enough that I don't think restating it is a bad idea.
That was my feeling.
He is correct. We stated in under concern one. But if it's really, I mean, isn't this one of the more important issues, really?
It is. It is to me. I mean, it's something that I brought up with the applicant when they first came in and, you know, sort of shocked that there wasn't a written document and guiding the development and future use of this property. So
I personally would recommend that we leave one as it is, because we say concern, so it is proper to state it this way as a concern. And I think he's right, though, about number six, that we didn't really do a very good job of developing that issue.
Yeah, and when I read the letter, it was that was the one that sort of I had trouble with, sort of, I don't know, not a red herring, but, you know, kind of took me away from the main point of the letter. So I agree with that one.
I'm just as I'm looking at this, I notice a passive voice that I would actually change on number three. Instead of saying it would be sold to, it was already, right? So we should actually say that such a large portion of the site was sold to a for-profit developer, because it's been sold to them. Do you know what I mean? So that's we would get rid of that passive.
Has it, or is it to any of it conditional?
Some has. So what's under phase one has. I checked the GIS the other day, and it's changed ownership.
It's been a title transfer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
So yes, change that tense.
It has been sold.
Mm-hmm.
Or was sold.
Was sold.
Yeah, because has been is still passive.
But there's still the phase two. So, I mean, there is that future element.
True. But right now we're just talking about phase one.
No. We're talking about our total concerns, including the upcoming phase two, the way I look at it.
I guess I'm
well, especially with the additional considerations, I feel like the additional.
How about present perfect? Is being.
Is being.
Look, as a former English major, passive voice is wrong.
But I took a lot of would be out of reports today.
What would it be?
Is being.
But being is a passive. But honestly, I'm not married to it. It doesn't matter. So we don't need to spend time on it. I just thought it would be a quick fix.
But just.
Because if we are talking about not just now, but also that phase two could be, that has the potential to, then I can see.
I think you're right. Present perfect. The sale of such a large portion of the site to a nonprofit developer.
Okay.
That covers both past and future.
Okay.
Be putting
you got that, Jack?
I think so.
I was not an English major, architecture major, who are notorious for
really
bad
good.
Writing.
Good handwriting. Good handwriting.
Good handwriting. Bad writing.
Are you going to put that in there, or do you need me to make a note?
Jackie.
Got it. Okay.
Jackie's got it.
I hope so. We'll make sure we drive by again.
We'll delete six, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anybody else have any concerns with any of Brock's other edits?
Or any of their own?
No.
I don't think Don ever wants to edit this again.
Well. Whatever gave you that idea.
I don't know.
My last seven emails.
With the
I don't want to see this,
I don't want to see this ever
this
again.
Again.
You just
remember, the perfect is the enemy of good enough.
So just as a question for next steps, so once this is finalized, then Alex is signing it? And
Alex and Sean?
Sean?
Mm-hmm. I believe that's what you guys decided, yes.
So it's formatted, yeah.
And then it's going to all of those people, the council, as well as the mayor. Is the full letter, did we decide, is also going to the Columbian, or did we determine the sources that we were going to also submit it to? Or is that something that is still on the table for us to decide?
That's still on the table.
Yeah, I think for right now we just want to get a final version discuss circulation.
Can we get a motion and a vote subject to the final editing, which we've all, I would even defer that the two of you can agree to the final editing and the whole commission not have to see it again. If it's okay with the other commission members.
Sure.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Can we do that?
Yeah.
Then I so move.
You want to make the motion?
I move that we approve the draft as edited and discussed at this meeting, subject to Jackie making the final edits and Sean and Alec have agreed that they meet what we've all agreed to here at this session.
I second.
Okay, all in favor?
Is there a discussion?
Sure. You want?
Yes.
Sure.
If there needs to be.
I was wondering if everybody got my executive summary.
We did. And so a lot of that got integrated into the cover letter, since that was the format that it ended up taking. So.
Okay, I didn't get any feedback. I was just curious.
I emailed you when it came to me.
Did you?
I apologize. There's nothing worse than not getting a response to your letter.
Sorry. Yeah, I can say I don't.
Yeah, because we definitely used that in turning and creating kind of the letter portion of it that leads into the rest of it.
Yeah, I think this whole first page is that.
I mean, it's not.
What I mean, not exactly, but.
And all of Sharon's emails were going to my spam for a while, so.
Yeah, I've read this before. So, I mean, I think I made edits and probably sent them to Sharon.
So, here's the problem. When we look at this, this is not
the same.
The final.
Right.
And that's what's different. If you look at what was on the website, Andy, this has been turned into effectively an executive summary signed after it, and the rest of it is a report attached. Maybe that's not as clear from the Redline strikeout version.
So we use the executive summary that you sent as a framework for creating the letter that leads into the more findings portion, report portion of it. So it doesn't have a true executive summary because it has basically a cover letter that serves the same purpose. And I personally found your executive summary very helpful in creating that letter.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, it may be that you didn't see responses because, you know, we can't reply all or that kind of thing. You know, I mean, we have to communicate directly with staff, so.
So it's our bad in not giving you feedback, though. I'll admit that.
Okay.
Accept that. My apologies.
Any more discussion? Is that? Okay, so our. All in favor of motion made, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All against? So moved.
Okay. So I will make those revisions and send it to the two of you to make sure all is there, and then we'll print out a copy and get your signatures.
All right. Okay. Now, do we want to take up the topic of circulation now?
So there were the specific theses in the letter. Not in this printed version.
Did we not request a response also?
Yeah.
We did.
What I was going to ask is that would it be a good idea to give the City Council an opportunity to respond? And unless phase two is imminent, so do we know when the phase two permits
As of last month, it hadn't even come in for pre-application. So.
But I would like to give the City Council an opportunity to...
Oh, I'm sure there will be a response.
Right. But I would like to give them their opportunity to respond before we send the same concerns to other audiences.
Well, do you think we would change our response based on their response?
No.
He's just saying give them an opportunity to read it and respond before we
right.
start sending it to the rest of the public.
It'll be a public.
Why?
It is a public document.
Yeah, it'll be a public document, so it's not that it won't be available. It's just whether we take an active role in disseminating it, say, to the media.
So I will just say that the Columbian has a standing request for council's email and correspondence that goes out every 2 weeks. So if you do nothing, the Columbian will get it. Mm-hmm. So the question is whether you want to actively send it to them or it'll just go in the batch of stuff that we send them every 2 weeks.
What about to neighborhood associations, too? Is that something that should be?
Well, what was our CC list?
The city manager, the director of community and economic development, and the CEO of the Historic Trust.
And then the Vancouver City Council members?
They're the two.
Okay.
So, yep.
Those are the two, yeah. This is the CC.
And the mayor.
The yeah. mayor's, yeah, mayor on the two.
Mayor
yeah,
and the,
so.
All the council members.
What about DAP?
I mean, I feel like they haven't been a part of this discussion where they probably should have been earlier in the process, so.
The CC DAP?
I would.
Probably need to actually vote on that one. That's a substantial change, just to cover our bases. So if there's anyone, we should discuss if there's anyone else we want to CC, and then we can do it all at once.
Well, how do people feel about a direct send to the Columbian or, a press release kind of thing?
I see. Oh, please go ahead.
I see Andy's point of view that maybe we ought to, as a courtesy, send it to the city and give them an opportunity to look at it and respond before we do anything else.
We did send a lot of CCs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not suggesting we try to keep it under wraps in any sense of the word. But if we're saying we would appreciate a response, we could see what kind of response we get, because what if they reply and say, wow, mistakes were made, we don't ever want to have this happen again, what advice do you have? Then the letter will have served its purpose and it will be a really good thing. And so I want to say is that if we put the letter in the hands of everybody out there, we wouldn't have given them a fair opportunity to do the right thing. Guess what I'm getting at.
I also see Andy's point. And right now the CC list is basically involved parties. Even DAP technically mm-hmm. is an involved party, as opposed to media or interested parties mm-hmm. who might, if we deem it necessary, do an outreach to. But it's going to get out, so.
But it'll be,
As Jan said, it will get to the Columbian anyway, so.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take it off the table, though. I mean, I think that there are phases, right? The mm-hmm. first phase is to communicate with the city, give them an opportunity, and then determine
that's what I'm asking.
The next thing is. Mm-hmm. And then if their response is, as you said, then there's one way of moving forward. If their response is opposite, there's another way of moving forward and determining who else we would like to just ensure understands our concerns.
Yeah, I guess I I wouldn't want it to come across as if the response isn't what we were hoping for, then it looks punitive that we're sending it to the Columbian or to other media mm-hmm. outlets kind of thing. So that, I understand the courtesy, I guess, of sending it to the City Council ahead of time. But at the same time, I feel like we've got a list of CCs in the letter. It's not going to change.
I don't see it changing, but let's, just for discussion's sake, would it make sense to, if we were releasing something publicly, to say this letter was shared with the City Council on such and such date, they have since responded, and we are now releasing this to the public? I mean, just making a comment in that sense, kind of wrapping up the process? I don't know, I'm just throwing it out there as an idea.
Question. When we finally sign this letter and send it, is it not part available to the general public anyway?
Yes.
Not part of the public record?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's really just a question.
It's in the public domain at that point. Now it's a question.
Well, yeah, so it's mainly appearance, you know, and you know, I feel like for it to have, I guess, the weight that I'm hoping that it does, that it's just kind of put out there to all equally at the same time. But I also see Andy's point that it's to the City Council. We're asking for a response specifically from them in the letter. But, I mean, sending it to DAHP at the same time doesn't change their ability or shouldn't change their interpretation of the letter or how it's viewed.
So the logic of DAHP is that they are part of the historic preservation apparatus for the state of Washington.
Correct.
So there's a logic to that that's different than sending it to a local newspaper.
Sure.
In my mind.
And that I kind of get, you know, that maybe the holding off or, you know, giving the council a chance to respond before or allowing it to get to
the point. So, Andy, what's your feeling about sending CCing DAHP?
Well, that'd be fine. I mean, they're all interested parties, but I would like to give the City Council, especially given the new composition.
That's what I was, you know, the new composition won't take place until January.
Right. I guess my concern was is that if the second round of permits is going to happen right away, then we want to make sure that as many people are in command of our concerns as possible.
Well, and I do feel a sense of urgency on this matter, and you know, I think it'll still be hanging around when the new City Council is formed in January. So, you know, I don't think timing it is a concern for that purpose. But what about the compromise of, you know, the CC list of actually, how did you term it, involved parties?
Yeah, involved parties.
Do we have a CC list shown somewhere?
That's what I was.
It was what you all had decided at your last meeting, I believe, was. So I had one prepared ready if you all voted on the version you have. So I have that from Sharon here.
Okay.
So it was the city manager, Eric Holmes, Chad Aiken, the director of community economic development, and David Pearson, the CEO from the Historic Trust. Those were the three that I believe you all determined was going to get the letter.
That was the complete list of CCs?
The complete list of CCs.
So all we're doing then is adding DAHP.
Mm-hmm. That's what I hear.
Yeah. I'm fine with that CC list. They're all involved parties, it sounds like, logically. And leave out the Colombian for now.
Mm-hmm. They may wind up asking us anyway.
Sure.
Well, and as Jan said, they'll end up getting a copy of it.
They can get it once we sign it anyway. It's in the. They can ask for it, right?
Yeah. Well, they can ask for it if they know it's been sent, but they're going to get it anyway.
Yeah.
Should we take a vote?
Can I ask a question, though, before we move there? I guess not knowing how quickly the city will generally respond or how quickly they do generally respond, and because of the urgency of it, would it, again, this is just for discussion, would it make sense even to just maybe comment, like, we look forward to your response, we plan to submit this to us in the new year, or just give them a heads up, like, we look for your response, but we're not going to wait for your response to take our next. And not necessarily, not a threat or anything, but just to be fully transparent with our intention of the letter. And then that way, we're not waiting on a response. We'll get one at some point, but we'll still have a plan of action. Just just throwing it out there to get your thoughts.
What? I don't know that we have a plan of action.
That would be it.
I mean, let's step back.
I think that's what we're discussing right now.
We have indicated, number one, we get to comment on phase two, correct?
When and if it happens.
Yeah. It seems to me that what we are doing with the letter is laying out a combination of concerns and preferences and desires and requests for how they behave going forward on the Academy property. It seems to me that's the end of the action until they respond to us and or phase two comes before us to review.
I don't think we could
tell them before we take a next action. Well, there's nothing to tell them. I wouldn't go there with this particular letter.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want it to come across as a threat or
no.
anything like that.
That was my.
Yeah. I'll have a copy. I can send.
That was my point.
I think in over the course of this discussion,
we want to lead them to do the best thing.
Gung ho about sending this to the Colombian. Now I'm sort of like, I think it almost looks better if it just ends up at the Colombian's hands through the natural channels that they're going to end up getting it. And that'll be maybe a two-week window where City Council will have time to look at it and think about it before the Colombian gets a hold of it. And
I think adding DAHP is logical
yeah.
to the CC list. And I think if we stop there, it looks like we're doing this in a professional way.
Mm-hmm.
You send it to the Colombian at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It then looks a little
yep.
sleazy. If I could use that word.
Wouldn't be our best practice.
Would not be our best day.
On the email list, so the department that's going to respond has it,
yeah.
and I know has been discussing it, not with me, but they've been discussing
okay.
it. So
sounds good.
I would suspect you'll get a response relatively quickly.
So do we need to agree to adding DAHP to the CC list since they weren't on it? Is there any concern about that, or just do it?
I think we should, just in case.
Okay. I move we add DAHP.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any against? Okay.
And I don't want to see the draft ever again. Once again, that's a long story. The subcommittee, Andy, we were looking at so many of these copies, and I finally said, I'm done with this. Got to go to the East Coast.
Okay, and then Jackie will get Sean and I
yes.
a
new version.
Penultimate.
And you're going to email it, right? Not mail it.
Yes. Is there a reason not to mail it? Or
I mean, you can mail it. It just gets there slower and sits in a file in the drawer for
people
to get around to picking it up.
Is there a city council email?
Well, they have all their individual emails, or you can, I will get Jackie, the council administrative assistant, and when she gets stuff, she distributes it to
okay.
all of them.
Good.
I
can always do both.
You can do both.
I think you can do both.
It'll just get there faster.
I think emailing it.
And then
to
they'll
city
all get it at
great,
basically
the
same time.
Maybe we should paper mail.
You can email the city council, and then there's going to be the signed version that we can snail mail, and we can snail mail the other ones to
yeah.
the CCs as well, copies to the CCs.
We can email them, too.
Why do you want a hard copy? I'm just curious. It will be archived
you can
or
both.
Put in the public record electronically.
Postal Service needs the mail volume.
There's a symbolic formality to it.
Because in my line of work, I hoard every archive I can, paper.
I'm not saying it's not okay.
Yeah.
I'm just,
I don't know.
First class mail is where they make their money.
But he's a former postal
guy
who knows they need their.
They need the revenue, guys. Mail it, too.
Okay.
We'll do both.
$8.50. Okay. So that's our plan of action.
All right.
I
have one little announcement before you go to public comment.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon, let me in a little note here. Julie's interested in the two-day DAC conference in Seattle. So Sharon wanted me to double-check, see if anyone else was interested.
When is that again?
It's in May.
May, yeah.
And I'm interested. We'll see what May holds. It's a little early to know.
It's about unreinforced masonry.
I'm interested, but I'll, yeah, it's the same May as.
I'm going to pass on unreinforced masonry.
Okay. Julie?
Yours is May?
Yeah. April, May, March.
Mine's the fall.
March and April.
And don't forget July.
So I'm interested, does that mean I'm committed?
No,
just
I think
just to get a sense of who would like to go if they're.
Yes, so that we can keep, you know, checking in on it.
So we don't spend all the money.
Right.
You're just interested.
Okay, that's all I have.
Okay. So at this time, I'd like to open up the meeting to public comment. If there are any members of the public who would like to speak, please come on down. And just introduce yourself at the microphone and.
I'm Mary Ann Russell. I'm from the Proto-Cathedral of St. James, not too far from Providence. And the Proto-Cathedral, St. James, was very opposed to phase one of Marathon's development. We voiced our opposition to the trust and largely fell on deaf ears, of course. And we're vehemently opposed now to phase two. I think commercialization of this site, of this area, is, and it's a culturally significant area, is going to mean, first of all, the destruction of three very significant buildings on the site. that's the laundry, the boiler house, and the smokestack. Even though by themselves they don't seem full of history, they were the lifeblood for the academy itself. The laundry actually housed some of the lay teachers in the school and some of the maintenance people, besides being a laundry. So destroying it is going to it's going to destroy a part that of history that sustained the academy, and I think it'll be completely wiped out. If the buildings themselves are brought to the ground. And they're the last tangible links that we actually have with Mother Joseph's construction. She probably had some hands-on part in building these three structures. And it's not just about the buildings on the site themselves. It's about the women who sacrificed almost everything to work there. Educating and nurturing future citizens of Vancouver. So we have these reasons for opposing phase two. We would like to see the ground used for something that's compatible with the mission of the sisters. And that would be health, education, nurturing the arts, assisting the poor. There's any number of things that could be done with that land. We wouldn't expect it to sit unused for years and years. But I would also like, at this point, to thank the commissioners for drafting and then finalizing a letter opposing. I'm assuming that's, although I didn't hear the draft, I'm assuming that's what's in the works here, correct? it's to us, it's reinforcing, it shows us that one part of city government is actually listening to us. And I would hope that going forward, City Council, the Clark County Historical Society at the Clark County Museum will also begin listening to the community and come out against this commercialization of this land. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other members of the public who would like to speak? Brad?
So, yeah, I just wanted to come and comment today about a potential of working together with the commission through the museum, and I'm doing it through public comments today because I didn't have time to get it on an agenda. It's just something that's come up very recently with me in the last couple of years through the museum is we've had lots of people reaching out to us about, you know, homes. Wattle Tree Place was one of the first places that we looked at that was, you know, in jeopardy of being torn down, and there really wasn't a discussion about the viability of that place, economic benefit, and also the owners just didn't have the resources necessary to really have a discussion with their owner before the building or the house was torn down. And just the last couple of days, I've had two additional sites mentioned to me. And so this is becoming a very consistent conversation that people are having with the museum. And I think it's an obvious opportunity for us in 2020 to sit down with both the county staff and with members of the commission to start discussing a strategy for creating an avenue for the public to feel like they have a place to go with these concerns, and then also that there's a mechanism for resources, help, and also advocacy to be provided in relation to that. So I'm basically just coming tonight to say I want to talk with y'all in 2020 to start discussing, you know, how we might be able to do this, whether it's a fully, you know, museum and society-led initiative, or it could be a partnership between, you know, the county, the council, or the commission, and the museum. Just, I think we're at a point where the community is really hungry for this opportunity to be able to do that, and they're out there looking around and making everyone aware, but then I think often they feel like they're just coming up against no way to actually do anything about, you know, these concerns or to have that discussion or resources. And so, yeah, I just ask for you next year to allow me to meet, schedule some time to meet with you, and let's start talking about a way that we can create a mechanism to take in all this information people are providing.
So we've had a subcommittee that's been working on this for, well, we haven't been working on it lately, but, you know, from the time that you and I and Scott Hewitt went and walked around downtown looking at buildings that were on the chopping block or, you know, suspected.
Yep.
We have worked pretty hard to try to figure out some kind of development, demolition review process to bring to county council, city councils in the county. And we've kind of stalled out. We do have a report from AECOM that is a little bit flawed, but I think does give legitimacy to these very concerns. I don't know. Have you seen that report?
I have not yet.
Okay. No. So we should probably get you a copy of that report.
Yeah.
You know, the tough thing about it is, you know, the regulatory side and how to implement some kind of review, and what does that review look like, and how heavy a lift does it need to be, and how to get it, you know, how to shoehorn it into existing code, or does it need new code written? And that, so we're kind of at that point where we have a report with recommendations, and now it's a matter of us kind of, what would you say, finalizing and putting our own stamp on it.
Yeah,
and I, you know, I'll admit that I've lost a little bit of momentum on this topic. It's not because of a lack of concern. It's, you know, it's just time commitments and various other things. But, you know, as we all know, the pace of development and demolition is continuing to keep speeding up, it feels like. And, you know, I do think that we need some sort of robust discussion and review in this county for a lot of those properties that are getting demolished.
And I think the inventory is a great way, and that's especially a great way to store the historical information about properties, especially as we're losing.
Well, which inventory are you talking about?
The one that you were discussing about with the demolitions.
Well, so there's the Clark County Cultural Resource Inventory, which I've never laid eyes on. I don't even know where it exists. And then there's the state's historic preservation, I mean the historic property inventory at the state level, which is accessible to the public. It's, you know, in perpetuity. It's housed and archived at the state agency. But the problem is how to get the information that's currently housed on Clark County GIS up to the H, who's going to fill out, who's going to, you know, bear the burden of the cost and everything. And so these are, you know, the devil's in the details kind of thing, and how so we welcome you on into the discussion. And
I think part of the conversation, too, is to be, you know, people are out there seeing sites all the time, and people often when I discuss, you know, I discussed a house in the Rosemere neighborhood for about 2 years now with a person, and she's been watching that house for years, and she wants to try and do something to help if that, and she's watching it fall into disrepair. And so I think there's an additional step that could be provided that would be essentially three-tiered, which is, you know, people can access something that provides resources for them. You know, they can look at something to help them understand how they might be able to help with a site if the person owns it, you know, about getting on the register, things like that. And then the second piece would be an active help portion where either the museum or some other entity actually comes out and helps, you know, people go through these processes. And then the last one is what I've often seen is people will kind of see a site and they'll start posting about it and saying stuff about it, and then the city hears something or the county hears something, but that's not actually true what's happening. And so then an education piece to the community where maybe you go and you reach out and you speak with some of the property owners or some of these properties that maybe are endangered, and then communicate through maybe the county or the museum to the public, oh, no, here's the real, and here's what actually means. So then the public starts to become more educated and then thoughtful in kind of how they're identifying these things. So just a general conversation, you know, in the coming year about this, because we're finding we're getting a lot of calls. And we want to be able to meaningfully return to the community based on those calls as opposed to kind of the normal conversation is I can't really do much for you. So I think just you are the best entity and county staff is the best group to sit down with and say, let's just even brainstorm what something like this would look like and who would be the partners in making something that's actually effective for communities to provide input about places they feel like are in jeopardy or they have concerns about or something of that sort.
You know, I think it sounds like what Brad is talking about goes also beyond just demolition. If we look at our mandate, since we have just recently been looking at our mandate through our legislation, you know, I think that we have a role for regulation, and I think the demolition definitely comes over that. And then we have an education role. And so being able to provide that education, I think we're a very logical place. And so maybe to start thinking about ways that we can do that in a more regular and accessible way for the public. Then there's, I think the other one, though, is advocacy. And I think because we have a regulatory role, advocacy probably isn't appropriate for us, which is why having another organization that can do advocacy. And so I think having that discussion about what is it that the commission can do. Now, there is a National Trust for Historic Preservation. There is a Washington Trust for Historic Preservation. Both of them have most endangered lists. There is no Clark County Trust for Historic Preservation. We don't. You know, the Historical Society has a mandate about history, but not a specific mandate about advocacy for historic buildings. Some might say that it falls under the broader mandate, but there isn't a body that exists just for that. And that can't be us, but I think beginning to think about what the community needs and what are the things that the commission can fill and having discussions with. And therefore, if something else is needed that someone else can do, that'd be a good role for them.
Well, take a look at that report and see if it, you know, sparks any ideas. And, you bringing this topic up might just get the demolition subcommittee back to feeling, put a little spark under us. So
well, we're not meeting next month. We've got an open dance card.
Well, we're meeting on the 8th.
Oh, that's
month.
Right.
Yeah.
We got something on the agenda.
I am in town all of December. So yeah. Available.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll talk about
the one of the things that comes to mind. Advocacy is important. Education is important. But at the end of the day, it comes down to somebody willing to invest financial resources to maintain these properties properly. Mm-hmm. That's typically what you run up against, is it economically viable? And if it isn't, can you find, I go back to my experience with the American Battlefield Trust. If owners don't want to do something with their property, the only way we can protect the land is to reach in our pockets and buy it from them or put an easement on it and somehow protect the property. And with a lot of these properties, you have owners who maybe are in a position where they really don't have the liquidity to be able to do that. Is there, is, are there sources we can start looking at and investigating who can help at low interest loans, at nominal loans, some ways to make it easier for people that would like to do it but may not have the resources to take care of property so that you don't have to face this demolition just because of neglect?
And I think that's what this partnership is discussing, creating mechanisms to identify those and then easily deliver those to the public for people who actually want to have those. Right now, like I said, nobody has anywhere to go, so mm-hmm. they come to us, and then we do the best we can with the resources that we have currently. But I think it's a bigger lift than just the museum could handle on its own. It's got to be sure. a partnership, and there is an education and an assistance and an advocacy role that could be played in all of this. And I think, honestly, I'm hearing from the community, one, they're hungry for it, and two, when we do something about it, they respond very positively because they think we're doing our jobs. So I think it's something.
Well, I think there needs to be some private interest as well, because when it comes to raising significant amounts of money, you're not going to get them from local government typically for something like this. You're going to have an outside advocate that will work with you. And
we can
find one, that would be wonderful.
And we can talk later about specific examples where we see that there is some positive movements through some stuff that we've been able to work on, you know, to that some people are willing to pay.
You know, this raises for me that in Clark County, we're actually missing some of the preservation mechanisms because we don't have certain bodies. So, you know, one of them that comes up is the preservation easement. You know, we don't have really a designated body in Clark County who could hold those easements or who could hold a historic property in general. You know, might be able to find, you know, another body outside of Clark County, or maybe, you know, convince like one of the environmental or ecology, you know, land trusts to do it. But there are probably other preservation mechanisms like that that just aren't available in Clark County because we don't have the organization who usually fills that role. So I think that it'd be good to have the discussion. I think at this point the discussion might be kind of broad.
Agree.
to figure out, who can do what, how can they do it, you know, what are the needs. I think identifying the needs, you brought a couple up right away. We've been talking about a couple of others. I think that's probably where that discussion starts.
Well, a governmental organization like the county could agree to hold such easements.
Could agree.
They'd have to agree to it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do it, they'd be willing to do it.
And there's just, you know,
I don't know I don't know anything about Clark County politics.
Well, and I think
the reason I'm willing to speak.
That's one of the things is,
nothing.
You know, we have organizations who could do or help with some of these, you know, preservation mechanisms that exist around the country, but there's a real value to formalizing it. But this is the one. This is who you talk to about that. And they've already got a process. You know, even if that's, this process is this photocopied, stapled booklet that you can read, or it's, oh yes, you know, we can hold a preservation easement. We're the ones who hold preservation easements in Clark County because we figured that out. Or, you know, we went to, you know, Rockefeller Trust and, you know, secured a seed grant that we can distribute to historic buildings in Clark County. You know, it's probably not Rockefeller. Maybe it's the Lynch Foundation. I don't know. But, you know, figuring out that, you know, maybe that's what it is. But I think having the discussion about what the needs are, what the opportunities are, and how something can be created.
Well, we'll let you know when our subcommittee meets next, and we'll invite you to join us.
Please do. All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Any other members of the public wish to speak? No? All right.
Things.
Yep.
January meeting, the School for the Deaf is coming to talk about their demolition renovation plans for their campus. So the superintendent's coming with her translator. So they're happy to talk to you about what their plans are. DAP would like to continue, you know, depending on what comes out of that meeting, DAP would like to continue to be in the loop, and they would be happy to have the commission be involved in whatever mitigation plan that they're working on with the school. I am rewriting the city's historic preservation code, and I have the first draft. And Ooh. I've had it reviewed once internally, and Jackie's looking at it now. Primary thing is syncing it up with the county code because it makes it much easier to administer when everybody's working out the same sheet of music. Changing the membership of the commission from a minimum of 5 to a minimum of 7 with 2 city appointees. So the county's already approved that, but the city needs to approve that too. So, anyway, we'll hopefully.
And slip in the demolition review?
I did change, well, you know, the thing is that code specific to buildings that are on the register. But I did add that they have to do photo documentation of those buildings if they're going to demolish them, which is not in our code currently. Our planning staff said they would be fine with requiring photo documentation to go along with demolition permits. It's not in that section of the code, and I need to figure out, like, where that would go or whether that's just revising the demolition app permit mm-hmm. to just add that. But they were like, yeah, it makes sense. The problem is where you store that information. Mm-hmm. So that's – and then the third thing –
Can I just interject? Yeah. So isn't that historic overlay the regulations that you're updating?
No, it's okay. It's Title 17, so it's the Historic Preservation Code. The Historic Overlay District is in a different section of the code.
And it's in the overlay where those view sheds are talked about
right.
and things like that. So what you're talking about is a separate.
What I'm talking about is the Preservation okay. Code that talks about how the Preservation Commission operates.
Okay.
For a city office of heritage services we haven't had in 20 years. So
okay.
It's like your regular process.
But I know that
city. Okay.
So there's that piece, then there's Title 20 that's got a bunch of like telling what regulatory bodies did, and I went and looked, and the historic preservation stuff in there doesn't match what's in the other section of the code, and so that there's some stuff I have to sort out with Jackie on that. But I did bring up the overlay district, and I to the planning staff to say, can we either put some teeth in this or let's just stop yeah. because it's a waste of people's time to be putting all this thoughtful effort into, you know, advice on this building and it gets completely ignored. And they're like, no, we really like this. We like having the Preservation Commission be able to weigh in on this. And so I'm not making a lot of progress on that discussion, but I'll keep pushing. So so there's all of this to say at some point when we've done all the internal reviews of the code. We'll bring it back to you guys so that you can see the changes we're proposing for the city code.
You know, I mean, the idea of updating the historic overlays every 5 years or something might not be a bad idea.
So the city center vision, which is the downtown redevelopment plan, we're going to do a revised version of that. And I highly recommend the Preservation Commission make known that they want to be involved in that discussion because that's where the overlays are.
Yep.
So
I would, one thing that I would say about the overlays is I would like them not to be gotten rid of because there is actually one very sharp tooth in the overlays, which is that right now it says that no building in any of the heritage overlay districts can be demolished without our approval. And it gives the criteria for approval as well, which are actually fairly steep. So, you know, talking about demolition, yeah, the design review parts of it are pretty toothless, but that part is actually really strong.
Well, and there was
really
no
strong.
Interest on the planning staff's part of getting rid of it. So, but it'd be nice if we could beef it up. But the process for doing that would be to be, you know, involved in the brand new city center mm-hmm. Vision plan.
That seems like something we should be involved in.
Yep.
So, and then the final thing is, for the 2020 state legislative session, it's an off year, but we usually make about $100,000 to $150,000 capital request, and we are requesting money to help preserve the smokestack at the academy. Now, that's assuming that there's a plan, there is a viable plan for how to do that, which the trust is working on at this point. So, but we're at least going to ask for some money to assist with that.
The matching one?
No, this doesn't require a match.
Okay.
That's it.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Jan. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to bring up? No? I guess at this time, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I was going to second. I think that counts as a motion in a second.